Hi, we're live, and today we're discussing mental health, halakha, and COVID-19. The reason we're discussing this topic is because it's a serious issue, and has also come to the forefront a number of poskim and important rabbinic figures in the American and Israeli community have put out opinions about the importance of being willing to pick up or answer the phone on Yom Tov or Shabbat as people are in isolation, and sort of noting the risk of the lack of contact that folks would have over a 3-day Yom Tov period or even a shorter period, and what that could mean for those who suffer from anxiety and depression. Of course, that's a huge and growing group. So today what I wanted to do is discuss the application of halakha a little bit outside, not in the sources as we've done with prior lectures as much, but just give an overview and some thoughts. And then the second piece I wanted to discuss is the non-halakhic component. Is there advice in the Jewish canon about how we all might respond? Because of course, mental health isn't this thing that only happens to some set of people who have an issue. It's like physical health. It's not that everyone is healthy and a few people are sick, right? But it's something we're all dealing with. It's just in the general category of well-being. This bifurcation is sort of a false choice. So to start, great and wonderful to see poskim being willing to say publicly what they and others have been willing to say privately for a long time, right? Which is that for folks who suffer from anxiety and depression, it's certainly sometimes suffik bikuach nefesh, right? You never know when, but unfortunately there are people who engage in attempts on their lives, and suicide is a rising phenomenon at this point in human history, but it's always something present and a risk. But then there's just the general point, which is that it doesn't need to come to a person wanting to take their own life, but that these maladies can have extremely detrimental effects on people's lives. So first, some of the rulings that have been out there generally. Rabbi Willig mentioned that people should be listening to their answering machines or cell phones. I suppose that people are willing, should be able to answer their cell phone for someone in need over the 3-day Yom Tov in isolation, or generally of someone suffering from anxiety and depression. Rav Schechter is sort of quoted, as he always has, often has, the teaching of Rav Chaim, that he's not mekel on Shabbos, but machmir on pikuach nefesh. He's not lenient with regards to the laws of the Sabbath, but he's stringent with regard to the laws of saving life. And in general, for a chole she'im bo sakana, the general principle has always been for someone who's ill, seriously ill, even if it's unlikely to cause a risk to their life. But even still, we would violate rabbinic laws on the Sabbath. And certainly if someone is in a case of pikuach nefesh, of a life, a danger to life, or safek, or a doubt about that possibility, then we violate everything in the Torah, basically, to save that person. Now, there are different opinions with regards to technology. Outside of the Chazon Ish, right, who ruled that electricity is like fire, therefore a biblical malacha, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach understood it to be maybe a derabanan, a rabbinic restriction, something about uvda dechol. It's a sort of a weekday activity, or maybe it's just a custom that we have to prohibit electricity, but it's something much weaker. And in general, we engage that opinion as the normative opinion in the rest of our halakha. For example, if we treated electricity as a biblical malacha, we wouldn't be able to do it even indirectly. And so when we open a fridge but know that perhaps the motor will turn on, that would likely be prohibited if we viewed just the current of electricity as a biblical prohibition. But we don't. Most of us open refrigerators, open doors, knowing the air conditioner will go on, drink water, knowing the cooler might go on, open the fridge, knowing that the unit might go on to cool it as we let in warm air. We're okay with that because it's an indirect malacha, and we're talking about a rabbinic prohibition. or maybe just even a custom. And so it's an important custom, and it becomes even more important with the ubiquity of technology. And now technology has become even more ubiquitous in this isolated age. And so it's arguably even more important for the technological carve out, whether that's a design of the halakha or an accident of history. Either way, this notion of the secular Sabbath and a break from technology has become widely popular and understood to be super important, disconnecting from our screens to connect to the world. I'm going to note that being home, I've been able to spend most days watching the sun rise and davening, often then, and often watching the sunset or the twilight period and seeing the stars come out and the moon and noting the darkness in a way that I'm not when it is a busy time of year. And just those things, being part of nature, as if nature was the separate thing, just being present in the world that we're in and feeling part of the grandiosity of all of it and sort of looking up and noticing it itself is an extremely pleasant and comfortable sort of thing. Maybe it's about getting washed up in something much grander or bigger, or about connection to the past and millennia of humans and others who have stared up at the same sky, or just the beauty of it all. But there's a profound sense of comfort and calm that eases tension to doing those things. And so that's just good advice generally. But that doesn't happen if we're stuck on the screens and we're stuck in these little screens and we forget the great world that is beyond the boxes we live in. Einstein used to call the houses boxes, I think. It's a useful thing. And so as we're in the boxes, but if you are fortunate enough to have a yard, to be able to just see the sky. Okay, so we have these concerns, and I think it's important to understand that the concerns aren't solved just by a phone call on Yom Tov, which is almost certainly permissible even for a Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, someone who isn't in fear of losing their life, but it's right to be able to speak with that person if they're in a state of strong anxiety or depression. I'll note that I've been doing that for years to people in our community under ruling from many poskim who have permitted it. Just it's the basic application of Jewish law. It doesn't require a chidush, a novelty, the same way we know that someone would take medicine or go to a doctor if there's a illness on Shabbat. This isn't different. And part of the effort to destigmatize it is to name that it is okay. And even though it isn't a condition that is treated in the same way, you don't get a chest x-ray to determine that you're suffering from depression, but it is just as an important, if not a more limiting feature of health and well-being. The nature of anxiety and depression are often such that they're not solved just by a phone call or contact. And I think that's something important to name. You know, many of us have suffer from, lived with, dealt with now or at other times, many people or ourselves who suffer, struggle, fight with depression, with anxiety. And it's not the kind of thing that you say, oh, well, here is depression. Let me call someone, it will be better. And I think some of the nature of this discourse, the way it's being discussed in the public, it's good, the discourse, and I'm glad it's happening, but I just want to name that it doesn't solve quickly, and we should be resistant, or this is sort of just a prophylactic warning, right? We should be resistant to the idea that just this form of contact, which is important, is going to solve the problem. The second piece is that it's not just about, you know, this melacha that people should be in contact. We're focusing on that because of the isolation. But over the years, I know I've received rulings, and it makes sense, right, that people who suffer from depression, for example, might go to the gym on Shabbat or work out if that is important in helping mood, and it often is. There are people who, you know, it's a spiral. When someone feels that they're starting to fall into a depression, people have different activities and coping mechanisms that they use to help themselves out. Sometimes it's writing or drawing. Sometimes it's just zoning out and trying to distract themselves and watching a TV show or listening to music. And many of the activities, sometimes it's going on a ride and just getting away from it all for a little bit. And over the years, people in the community have come to me and said, Rabbi, I'm falling into depression. And one person said, what I really like to do in the fall when that's happening is just go for a drive. We live in New England, despite the background, and look at the foliage. Or it's important for me to just get on a treadmill, put on some music, and run, and that helps me cope. And so people have different ways of trying to deal or cope. And it's actually very difficult because part of anxiety and depression frees people up. And part of it is a lack of motivation and energy, and not just a general, you know, I think people confuse it for laziness, almost an impossibility or a physical barrier like cement to being able to do anything proactively. And so we have to realize that if someone does call on Yom Tov or Shabbos and they're suffering in this way, it's important. And they probably used a lot of energy just working up the courage, forget the stigma of calling on these days to do that. But anything they would do, it's not just this melacha, exercise, other things. And so I think we need a general sort of understanding the same way. If someone were doing a rehab routine that was important to their heart health and needed to use a treadmill on Shabbat, that it could be that someone who's suffering from depression in a particular period might need to do the same thing as well. And so to do the broad rethink of this, I want to give a shout out to Mark Fine, who's been promoting a pick up the phone, a hashtag pick up the phone campaign. I think that's an important start, right? It's just to be able to be there for people and what that will mean for our communities. Because for a long time, those that suffer from anxiety and depression have really struggled. I'll add that it's not just the isolation of the quarantine that make it difficult, but often Shabbat and Yom Tov are difficult anyway. People frequently have a hard time doing things quickly when they're in a sort of place of depression, and they're struggling often just to get through their work day. But there's a slowness that comes with suffering from depression. And so Shabbat, by its nature, starts at a particular time. And already just the Shabbat is going to start at this time for people who suffer, I know, is a tremendous challenge. People want a little extra time on the front end to get into Shabbat, because that time-pressured rush when they're suffering from depression can be a real challenge. So just starting to really have deep empathy and understand the ways in which the whole system, being in public when you don't feel like being happy, being at Kiddush and having people think that maybe you're rude just because you're struggling, all of these things, the whole nature of a communal celebration of Shabbat and Yom Tov can be an additional stressor and can compound rather than assist. And so the ways in which we might allow for more flexibility in general, applying the normative principles of halacha, there's no great halachic chidush here, but to sort of extend the thinking that we've started here by saying we're going to pick up the phone and Mark Fine's campaign and all of that, and saying, yes, that's great. And I think there's a yes and, which is that it's not just now, it was always a need. It was always a struggle. I know that Rabbi Yoni Rosenzweig is working on a whole book on this that will be an important release across the sea in Israel, and everyone should read it. But just to think about all the ways in which we need to adjust our expectations and allow for people to do what they need to do in order to be in a better place. So that's sort of the first piece, is I just want to encourage people to think about it more broadly, to share their experiences. We might have, you know, interesting communal reckoning or conversation, but it's a really important and a really unfortunate thing that caused it. But it's great to see halachic leadership from some of the post-team in the community that is really vision-based and sort of right on the medical knowledge. This is where sort of a Torah Umada ideology can be really good, right? Torah and knowledge, and sort of really looking at, well, what's changed. What's changed is that we have a totally different understanding of psychiatry now. And so Torah Umada doesn't just incorporate Kant or some kind of, you know, philosophy frozen at a slightly prior period in time, like Rav Shigar, and it would incorporate, you know, even postmodern philosophy and truths therein, but psychiatry and other disciplines. Certainly people have spoken about neuroscience in that context, but here it's just a good application of medicine, particularly disciplines of psychology and psychiatry, to Psak Halacha, and understanding the dangers, but also how people are suffering, especially as anxiety and depression have increased in our world, which is sort of disconnected from the human condition broadly, right? Which is part of what results in this. I wanted to now shift gears. So I just want to note, both I and Rabbanit Avital will have our phones on for all of Yom Tov. And we're not going to be, you know, attached to them at a hip. But if you need to speak or want to speak, and you feel that either of us are people you want to speak to, you should call. and we'll get back to you. And you shouldn't hesitate about that if you're suffering from anxiety or depression. It's totally fine. I'm not saying you'll want to speak to us. That's true for anyone, but sort of a communal norm. But certainly now, as the concerns are increased, but even not now. Okay, another thing, I wanted to share a teaching of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, because, as people know, Rabbi Eric Green wrote the biography Tormented Master, but Rabbi Nachman likely suffered from depression, and people have critique that and say, well, how do we know? And you can't diagnose depression from the past. But with the historical evidence we have and his description of what he terms marash chora, a dark bitterness in his writing, those that suffer from depression recognize that Rabbi Nachman understood the darkest corners of depression all too well. And you don't get there without going there. So what was his advice? And his advice is actually in the teaching that maybe is the hardest teaching for this. It's the teaching that became, the song, Mitzvah Gedola Lehiot Simcha Tamid. It's a great mitzvah to be joyous always. And I wanted to study the teaching because actually that teaching and the two after it contain his best advice, and it is good advice, for how to deal with anxiety and depression. Because it's not just that Judaism has these halachic tools where legally we can ease strictures in order to accommodate human suffering. That's one tool the Jewish box has, but it would be too narrow to look at Judaism as just a set of legal rules without appreciating that it has powerful insight in its canon into the human psyche and ways in which we might improve our lives spiritually, religiously, physically, mentally, as well. And so it's not just that we can ease restrictions to not cause more harm and sort of do less harm. That's Aleph, but Bet is, there is constructive advice here. So I'll do a screen share. So we're looking for the 24th teaching. Here we are. We're in the Chelek Bet in the second part of Likute Moran. And this is the 24th teaching, Kaf Dalet. Mitzvah Gedolah Lihiyot B'Simcha Tamid. We're not going to read it all. We'll skip around. In the parts that are relevant. It's a great mitzvah to be joyous always. So this isn't just a teaching about being happy, it's not Pollyanna, to strengthen with all of our strength and to distance sadness and marash chora and depression, to fight against depression with all of our strength. Rabbi Nachman goes on, every illness that comes to a person comes, maybe overstating it, but in general, from a degradation of joy. And we know that the states of anxiety and depression do, in fact, lead to poor immunity. And so he's working with this, maybe not in a scientific way. And so he's working with the spherot. There are 10 types of song, and they are all sort of forms of joy. Alei Asor, as it's written in Tehillim, Alei Asor, there's a 10 from Eser, there's a 10 stringed instrument. Kisamchinu Hashem before Alecha, and God will rejoice in our Kisamachtani Hashem before Alecha. And we'll rejoice in God's ways, etc. Okay, the Eliyud Mine Nigina Baim Besokasara Mine Tfikin. Im Mechino San. Okay, Shish Kilku Fagam Besimcha, Shibachinus Yud Mine Nigina, Ayadeza Bain Cholas Mine Yud Mine Tfikin, Shinus Kalkulin Ayade Kilkula Yud Mine Nigina, Shehima Simcha Kanal. Explains that there are these 10 types of songs, and when we are experiencing a sort of an illness or a lack of chiyus, a lack of sustenance of life, that they're coming from some, you know, the song isn't firing on all cylinders. There's a lack in the song. This is Rabbi Nachman as an early modern Orthodox Jew or a Torah Umad Jew. But the doctors have said a lot about this, he says, that all of the illness comes from depression and sadness. So just to be clear, I'm not saying that people that get the coronavirus is because they weren't happy enough. That's not what we're, this is not a blame accusation game. Rabbi Nachman is talking in general about the malady that comes he's talking about mental health in general as an important feature of our overall well-being, which is true. And joy will be, great healing. In the future, there'll be great joy. As the sages teach in Yerushalmi Sukkah, the famous teaching about the Messianic era, that you'll have God as the Rosh Choleh, that he'll be the head of the sort of hospital ward. How does he do that? He makes a circle, relating here the notion of Choleh, of sick, and Machol, of circle. It's an interesting idea to relate these two ideas. So God will sort of lead in this dance. And part of the circle, of course, is that everyone can see each other. There's an interactivity to it. And there's an equal distance from God, but there's not a sort of competitive lack, a spiritual inequality. Famous teaching with halachic implications about standing before someone who's sick when you go to pay a sick visit, that the Shechina, the divine presence, rests above the headboard of the bed of someone who's sick. Says in that Hashem will sustain us above the couch or the bed of pain. As a source for this idea, but the general idea that when we suffer, which is a human experience that everyone experiences, and the Buddhists have a lot to say about this, obviously, but Jews do as well. It's not just a Buddhist thing. That there's presence there, that God is present with us, not just in joy, but in the suffering. Because, right, someone who's sick, you know, they lose a little bit of their energy, and there's a sort of humility that comes with that, and God steps in to fill the void. So God is, the person is more solely relying on something more basic. Okay. Is talking kolacholas, and so in the future, through this joy, this sort of deep, profound well-being, all of the illness will become fixed, improved, healed. God will be a sort of healer. So that's the first piece of this idea. So just to summarize the first part of this teaching, I would say, and to amend it slightly, that marash chora, depression, anxiety, these things are not unrelated to our health in general. They're part of immunity. They're part of our spiritual health, and they're part of our overall well-being, and that God has this special role as supporter of those who are sick and helps us to sort of sing the song of life on all of its levels, to get it going on the 10 levels of song, to fully engage our personalities spiritually so that we're sort of vibrating. I almost think about string theory and this notion of vibrating strings, and this is Rabbi Nachman's string theory, right? Are we fully going? Are we fully vibrating on all 10 of our spiritual levels? It goes on to give more practical advice. I know that was pretty theoretical. This is what's hard. You have to work hard with all of your strength to be happy always. Now, it's interesting. People quote this, and that seems like a bad idea. You know, isn't there not a time for sadness as well? Is this not fake to be only happy? There's great pain out there. People are dying. People are losing jobs. People are suffering. Why to be only happy? It's not an accurate reflection of the world. But Rabbi Nachman presumes that there is enough sadness and depression, and that's not something we need to cultivate more. So it's not that if someone isn't always happy that there's something wrong with them. It's the opposite, that of course there's plenty of sadness and depression, and that's the given state of nature. Because there's a negativity bias, says Rabbi Nachman, which we know is true. The news fixates on calamities and not the good news. Most things that happen in most days are good. People help their neighbors and love their families, but the news fixates on catastrophes and calamities. And so that's just a reflection of our psyche generally. As he says, a person carries themselves to a depression and sadness because of the occurrences of time and the assaults of the day, right? How many people have the coronavirus? How many fatalities? How many ventilators are left? Just how bad is it? How bad is the governmental incompetence in responding to it? And so we focus on the negative and we fix it on the negative. And of course, from an evolutionary perspective, that makes sense. It's more important for a survival perspective to pay attention to that which will kill you than that which is wonderful. And so that's the way we're wired up, is to focus on these things. And so that's the given. So it's not that Rabbi Nachman's ignoring those things, but that's the nature of a person already. So we don't need to cultivate negativity. We need to cultivate joy. Everyone, you know, it's not just some people suffer more, but this is an existential condition that everyone, the existential condition is that everyone focuses on temporary impermanences and pains, but suffering is universal. And so that's an existential condition of unfulfillment. So a person is always engaged in this sort of war to be happy when there's always negative things which would draw them otherwise. And now there's a universal global negativity, which is affecting all of us in a profound way. And so it's even more, if this was always true, it's more true now. And it has become more true because of the internet, but now it's on hyperspeed. So the first piece of practical advice then is use anything you can in fighting depression. So Rabbi Nachman says, even things that are stupid. I like to think about cookies. But it doesn't matter what it is, right? Maybe it's not cookies. Rabbi Nachman is saying, find simple pleasures, even if they're not deeply enlightened, right? It doesn't have to be the Zen drawing book or the mindfulness meditation app. Of course, are hard to use when you're in a period. Even simple pleasures that cause joy in life. Mile dishjusa. That's the first piece of advice. Avshagam lid nishbaru tov ma'od. So he now notes, right? He's dealing with this issue. But isn't it good sometimes, not just realistic, but spiritually beneficial, not to always want to be happy? Is that not just an escape from life? So it's true that lev nishbar tov ma'od, as the Hasidim like to say, right, in shalim kalev nishbar, there's nothing so whole as a broken heart. The pain in the world is a way of sharing with God's pain in the state of the universe, the exile of the Jewish people, however you want to talk about it. This is a desirable spiritual state, to be open-hearted, to be open enough to feel the pain and to let it in. In kozehu rak be'ezo shah. So that is true, but that is only good sometimes. So we're now, his second piece is that he is qualifying mitzvah gedola liyos besimcha to me. It's important always to be happy, but by always, we don't mean always. We mean that it's important to only be sad sometimes. So this is a change from it's important to always be happy to it's important to only be sad at particular times, not to be sad about the coronavirus all day, every day, but rather be'ezo sha'a, at some time. Roilik bo'elo eze sha'a b'yom, to schedule it, it's proper to fix this time, eze sha'a b'yom, l'shaber li bo'lefaresh sichas l'fanav yisbarach. So he now goes into his classic practice of hispodidus, which is he feels the remedy. So the first remedy was mile d'shtusa, call it cookies, but simple pleasures. And the second, binge TV watching. And the second piece of advice is to find a particular time, like a kind of therapy with God as the therapist, the Shabir Libo, to break your heart, to let it in, to let it open, to reflect on what's going on, but not in an addictive, frightened way, but to really go deeply in and to let the heart crack open over these things. So the Farsi Chasol, the fun of Yisbra, and then to cry out to God over it, Kamuvat Zleinu, like we do. This is the Breslov practice. And then the rest of the day, you know, you're kind of apportioning a time to allow for this. You're not constantly fighting the intrusion of the negativity, but rather you're finding a time to embrace. And so we've changed the teaching from it's good to always be happy to, it's crucial to find a specific time to be really, to really go dark. Because if you always have a broken heart, it's very easy to fall into a depression. And it's easier to fall into a depression than it is to become Pollyanna and to become a happy-go-lucky, going to say a na-na-nach person, which is funny because we're talking about Rabbi Nachman. You get the point, right? To just become so happy that you're detached from reality, chas v'shalom. That is not something I'm afraid of, says Rabbi Nachman, that people are going to become so happy, they'll become unrealistic and a clinical happiness that is causing maladjustment with others. That's not the fear. The fear is depression. Lavola is a hololus that becomes so silly, chas v'shalom. It's more likely that a person will fall into a depression and they'll become a clown. Alkein. Therefore, should be happy always. And what we mean to say is that you should have a fixed, appointed time for a Lev Nishbar. His final piece that we'll share here, the 25th piece about the Hisbodudus practice. Hisbodudus, of course, is a sort of meditation, maybe not of course, where one would go out, and here, right, we're all in bidud. That's the Hebrew word for the isolation, quarantine. Most of us around the globe are in this form of sort of quarantine or isolation. And so this is universal advice from Rabbi Nachman. He prescribed this as a practice to sort of separate from people, right? And to allow this sort of brokenheartedness. It's not just a separation, but it's a pain. And it's a great level. It's perhaps the highest of all of them. To pick an hour or a moment or so. To be alone in a room or in the field. And this is a good practice for now. Right? And to pour out your heart between you and your maker. In a way that's, you know, not angrily, but in a way that's pleasant and appeasing. The vakesh lechanim milafanim yisbarach, to request and to plead before God, shikrivo elav lavodas obemes, that you can come to him in truth, or to ask God how it is that we're supposed to deal with these things. I would say that Yishai Ribo's music video, Keter Melucha, is almost a musical video attempt at his bodidus, right? It's a sort of tchina, bakasha, in the form of a music video there, about what does it mean to serve God in these times. But certainly what it means is to recognize at this point and always from every, what we call figeu mikreazman, the sense of interconnectivity. It should be in the vernacular. You shouldn't try and do this in a language you don't speak, because it has to be from the heart. Tainu for him, b'lashon Ashkenaz, so it should be in Yiddish for them. But for Americans, it should be in English. Because it's difficult, even for Rabbi Nachman, to really do this properly in Hebrew. So it's in Yiddish. But the heart has to be in the words. You know, it can't be an exercise in trying to phrase a language you're not familiar with. They're not familiar with the language. It's already hard enough to speak to God. Don't make it a language challenge. Because we don't speak right there in Uman in Hebrew. They speak in Yiddish. So it's much easier to break the heart open by speaking in the language you speak in and to have an actual conversation. It's not about Yiddish per se. It's the language you're accustomed to, explains. So he says, Yizar ma'od argil atzmo v'has mid bazem mid yom b'yom sha'am yuchedes kanal. Person should make sure to do this every day. Ushar yom yeh b'simcha kanal. And then the rest of the day can be happy. V'hanagazo hi gedol ma'ala ma'od ma'od. This is the practice he recommends the most. Uderach ve'itza tova ma'od v'skari ve'elav yisprach. And it's a good way to not just to have well-being, but to come close to God. Call this God is your therapist. Gizosi etza klalius shekol hakol. It's a general advice and includes everything. So there's more to say about that. But so just to summarize Rabbi Nachman's teaching here, the first is that he's more concerned with negativity and negativity bias leading to anxiety and depression than he is with someone being unreasonably happy. The second piece is that someone should do anything they can to assist with that, even if it's silly or insignificant things, what he calls mile tishtusa. The third piece of this teaching is that a person can't be happy by living in a fake world. We have to face up to the challenges. And I think sometimes when we speak about anxiety and depression, it's something to solve. And even now in the halakhic discourse, we talk about it as a danger. We ignore the root underlying, right? There are chemical underpinnings and things like that, of course, but there's a general sort of cause of the anxiety and depression that people experience. That's true before the coronavirus, and it's certainly true now. But there are always other features, and there are new ones like a climate catastrophe looming. But now there's an immediate one, right, which is the coronavirus. And so these, they're not causeless. And so Rabbi Nachman says the realistic way to be happy and to be joyful, to be singing in life is not to ignore these things, but to find time to dive deep in them every day alone. It's hard to do it with others. There's judgment and there's embarrassment, but to find time alone and to speak to God about it, and to, for a person to pour out their heart and figure out how they're going to do and to really own it. So in this teaching, turning towards suffering is actually the path for happiness. And then the rest of the day, it's sort of that's been taken care of. It's like people who, it's not me, but there are people I know who exercise first thing in the morning and it's done. So Rabbi Nachman saying, you know, you should find a time every day and make sure it's a fixed scheduled time to do this breaking of the heart. So I hope we'll conclude this teaching now on mental health in Judaism. Part A was a discussion broadly of the halakha that's developing, which is good and welcome. That Shabbos and Yom Tov, especially in this isolated period, especially with the extra mental health concerns, are causing spikes in anxiety and depression. And we should welcome that and understand the halakha adjusts to that to ease up on it, both with an easing of restrictions on technology. My point that it's not just about technology. There are many other things people suffer from anxiety and depression might want to do on Shabbat or Yom Tov to ease the plight, and we need to discuss those things. And then Rabbi Nachman's sort of counterpoint to that, which is that depression and anxiety are not just things you fix and symptoms you treat, but rather a reflection of the actual bad things going on in the world that contribute to them. And there are chemical components and psychiatric components, sure, but there are actual causes here of what's going on for people, which is why we're seeing an increase. Social isolation makes it harder. And one of the practices he recommends is in fact an isolated practice named for its isolation, but really facing up to this experience that we share together of being alone and in pain, and to cry out to God and to sort of connect to the Creator in that way. And so I offer that as a rounded teaching that may be of use this Passover and always on Judaism and depression.